hello. Welcome back to Jules on the Hustle, straight from World Team Tennis, West Virginia. A guest that I'm a little envious of, I guess you can say. Yes, envious. Nina Pantic just got back from West Virginia, where she got to watch 3 weeks of World Team Tennis. Not only did she watch, but she got to do commentary, writing, and social media for the Tennis Channel. I'm so excited to pick her brain and ask her all what it was about there, how the vibe was, and how often do you hear the words team and tennis together? Yeah, never. Unless it's World Team Tennis or college tennis. On-court coaching and cheering for teammates, playing something for something bigger than yourself. This was made for me. I'm not even kidding, guys. This event was made for me. Except I've never played. Well, not yet, at least. It was a bubble. If you left the bubble, you were donezo. And we had one instance of that. A player from Orlando Storm leave. We will dive right in. We will get the juicy deets from Nina Pantic. Also, I want to know her thoughts on the U.S. Open. The new rules were announced today, and I just can't wait to hear what she has to say. But without further ado, Nina Pantic. Hey, Nina, you just got back from World Team Tennis. I gotta say, I was just telling the listeners, I'm a little envious. You know, I really miss watching tennis. And obviously, I got to watch on TV a bit and follow through social media. But just being there is a totally different vibe. You've had a few different roles, it feels like. Tell me just like a little bit about the atmosphere.
So I do feel like unbelievably lucky that I got to go, and I was pretty much the only media there. They had some local media show up for certain days, like news channels, but I was the only reporter. And it was, I mean, I felt so lucky, but it also was really scary because I had different roles. But the atmosphere was really unique, and I think we'll never get to replicate that again. It kind of felt almost like, I've never been to the Olympics, but it felt like almost like an Olympic village where everyone is in something together and we're all part of this like amazing, historic 3 week period. And I know that they're fighting against each other to win this prize money and the King Cup and everything, but there was a sense of camaraderie and team spirit. Everyone was united for like one big cause. But the first few days were definitely nerve wracking. Like everyone was panicking and you had to wait for your test results, and that caused so much anxiety. But once we got through, like the first test was just to get on site. Second test was to be allowed on court. Once you get past that, you kind of have the sense of like, yeah, man, like we've made it. This is part of like, we're in this, like we're doing this. And then tennis just took over, and the tennis was awesome. I'm not a huge World Team Tennis person. I haven't watched a ton before, maybe in like 2015 when my friend played. But I got into it, and it's different, but it's one of the most unique experiences, I think, of my life, not just my career, was getting to be there for the whole thing.
Can you kind of discuss what the social distancing was like, what some of the rules were, and how it actually played out?
I can't imagine how it feels from, like, your perspective watching. I'm kind of curious to see your take, because I know that as the season wore on, like I said, like once we got past these tests, and there was a third test as well, everyone started high-fiving more. Everyone, you know, started hugging more. But in terms of social distancing from strangers, that was the same throughout. We never got near the hotel guests. Fans were always kept at a pretty big distance. When you're indoors, there's an indoor stadium. Everyone had to wear masks, which everyone did. I don't know how it looked on TV, but, like, everyone did. Players did not wear masks on court. That would have been so bizarre.
I saw Venus. I feel like she was wearing a mask. She might have been the only one.
All right, Venus has like an immune deficiency disorder, so I feel her, and she took it all a little bit more I mean, everyone had a different comfort level. I think the same as when you go and meet up with your own friends, everyone has a different comfort level, and Venus had a different comfort level, and we respect that. So she didn't do, you know, press or anything like that. And then I think the social distancing, it was a matter of the beginning, if your teammate or your coach hadn't got their test results back, which was super awkward, people stayed apart. And then as we got closer and closer to the end, everyone became more and more of a same as like you and your family. Like the first few days, you're probably like, ooh, I hope I'm okay. And then as you get through, you're like, we're a part of a unit. We're a team. And the entire staff, like everyone was part of a team, not just like New York Empire. It was like we'd all been living together. And that, yeah, the house was huge. It was a 11,000-acre resort, but it was still the same idea.
Speaking of the resort, it looked really beautiful. I saw you golfing at times, doing different activities. How was it being in a hotel for 3 weeks, living out of your suitcase, essentially?
It didn't feel like a hotel. Like, I mean, just felt, it's still, I still, I'm still so fresh from it. It still feels like the most surreal experience because I've covered Grand Slams. I mean, you have too. It's a little bit different, but the hotel felt, I don't know, almost like a giant playground. You had all these different things you could do, and the activities were so relatively safe. You weren't, you know, we weren't going to the casino. We weren't going in bars. It wasn't like we were, you know, doing anything wrong per se, but you were going and playing golf, which is one of the most socially distant activities ever, and you'd go with your teammates or your coworkers. And then there was other random activities like horseback riding. There was, everyone was really into the off-roading vehicles. I did that as well. And then there was this falconry academy where they had all these birds, fly fishing. I don't know if anyone did that, but it kind of looked like it'd be too hot to do, but they did.
The way you're describing it, it feels like it was like a three-week camp kind of thing where you get to like immerse yourself into different activities. And I, as a tennis player, I was always a fan of, you know, participating in different sports and activities, kind of widening your skill set. So I don't know, this feels like an overnight sleepaway camp. I don't know, something about this just really feels like that.
That's exactly correct. It was literally an adult summer camp.
I love that.
People said that multiple times. Like, once we got past the first few hurdles, everyone's like, we're in summer camp. This is where we live now. And we get to be there for, like, most of the summer.
That's like, brilliant.
Yeah. People played a lot of golf. Like, a lot. Some people play golf, like, after their matches. Like, the day of their matches. I played once. I'm not that good. I was good with that. I was happy with that. I can say I've played the Greenbrier course. I'm good for life.
Now, I know on your podcast, we discussed a little bit of reality television. Now, could you see something like this being on Bravo? Was it that dramatic or not so much?
We said that too. Honestly, we said that multiple times. Like, had we had a film crew following this? And if it wasn't, I think the hard part is people understanding why we're not wearing masks and why people, you know, high five. So if it wasn't COVID, I think it would be an unbelievable documentary because you could really get into people's lives. And as you're there for so long, you let your guard down. I think people would be like this. The confessionals would be incredible.
Wait, Nina, this is a great idea. After this podcast, we're discussing this. It could be like filming a show, basically. Oh, love it.
It would be amazing. And it would make tennis so much more mainstream if you could really get locked into all the different characters and how the drama unfolded across 3 weeks. It would be so phenomenal. Maybe next year if they do it in one location, but I don't know if they can replicate this. Like, Coco Vandeweghe won the whole thing with her slapping forehand on match point. And she's like, I don't know if we can ever replicate this. And I think she could be right. Like, but maybe for TV.
Right. No, if we could, that would be super fascinating. I think people would learn more about the players, the lifestyle, tennis. Although world team tennis is not exactly what it usually is, as tennis is an individual sport, but I think that's what would make the show interesting. But I want to know how the level of tennis you felt was post-quarantine, probably a few more jitters, just because players haven't competed much. I know it is a team environment, so that could calm some players down, but I'm interested to hear from you what you thought.
Oh, definitely could calm you down, but also could make you more nervous. I think some players embraced it more than others. I think there was a few that came in a little rusty, and it was pretty obvious. Like, I think someone like Sloane took a little while to warm up. Someone like Sophia Kenin was hot right off the blocks. I think Tennis Sandgren came in, like, fitter than ever and ready to go. Taylor Fritz was, like, virtually unstoppable. I think people took the quarantine in different levels. Some took time off, and you could tell, and that's okay. Like, there's no rush. We have many, probably many more weeks to go. And some players used it. Like, Sophia Kenin didn't stop practicing. She trained every single day. And I was also really impressed by Jessica Pegula. She was crushing it. And she was initially not playing singles, got into singles, and, like, was unbeatable, basically. So did different levels. I think someone like Jeannie Bouchard came in with, like, so much training. She went to Vegas before and trained with Gil Reyes. And you could tell, like, she was so into it. And she's going to Prague next. And she's so excited to get a chance to get actual points. But you put so much pressure on yourself. So there was a variety, a hodgepodge of different people. But I think most people got locked in and used it as a training block. And there wasn't that many injuries except Kim Clijsters, which is kind of a big one. But I was surprised by the lack of injuries. People really stayed relatively okay. I think maybe Vegas had a few. Asia Muhammad got injured, and then Kim Clijsters. That's not bad for like 50-something players.
Yeah, it was a lot of tennis into 3 weeks. Your body wears down. Obviously, having a rotating lineup is great. I know, although some players always played singles and some players always played doubles. So, yeah, like you said, I am actually pretty surprised. Kim is obviously on her way back, and she's not the youngest out there. Probably one of the oldest, honestly. So that does make sense. Now, how did you notice the team aspect worked out? Did you see people enjoying it? On-court coaching sometimes rubs players the wrong way. I personally adore it, but I know I had some teammates in college tennis that just hated it. So I'm curious what you thought about that.
Okay, I love on-court coaching. I just want it to be equal across all tours and all tournaments. In this case, because there was no ball kids and no linesmen, the teammates, and even though it was some days it was like 100 degrees on court, the teammates would be up in the corners and standing there and helping their teammates through the matches. I mean, it depended on the situation. If there was a first set, like maybe not so much. But as the match got more and more important, people were so into it. They were hanging out on the court, adding to the coaching. So you'd have, like, Jack Sock playing, and, like, Luke Jensen is the coach for him. But then Kim Clijsters is right beside them, adding her own 2 cents.
And it's See, that's so stressful. You know how I just said that, like, it probably wasn't as stressful? Yeah, that's to have Kim Clijsters in your corner and then another player as your ball kid and your coach. Yeah, okay. I take it all back.
Yeah. Everyone wanted to perform for themselves. And then, obviously, because we're on television showing the world that, you know, a sport can be played, so you have that pressure. Then you have your teammates. But I think a lot of players use it as positive. They wanted to perform well for their teammates and use this time as a launching pad into like what is going to be hopefully the ATP and WTA tours. So it's depends on how you look. I don't think people like cracked under the pressure. And I think the team setup was awesome. It was a really good way to go from quarantine to the tour. Like that's a great way to get into it. You're only playing the five. It matters, but it's not going to like make or break your career. And you get to say you were part of, like, one of the most unique sporting events ever.
It's a great warm-up tool and a great way to kind of bond with other players on tour, which is obviously rare. I know players couldn't do face-to-face interviews, or were they able to? Can you tell me about the media setup and what that was like?
Yeah, it was weird at first because, you know, I showed up with I drove from New York, and I had that nasal swab test in New York, and so in my opinion, I was like, I'm good. Like, I have no issues here. But a lot of people flew in and stuff. And so the first few days, we would try to space out 6 feet apart. We had, like, a microphone set up for them. And then no one would touch it. It would just be, like, a standing mic. And then we'd be – I mean, there was one World Team Tennis staffer and then me. It wasn't like it was a crowd. And we would wear masks, obviously. And the players post-match usually had masks on as well. Depending on if they were on camera, they wouldn't have the mask on. And then we had, like, weird setups, like, so they would come on set to do post-match interviews, but they'd be, like, more than 6 feet away from the host. There was, like, Nick Spondi and Olivia at Decker were the hosts, and they'd be, like, talking into a camera while the player is, like, 10 feet away talking to another camera. Kind of weird. Indoors was even more crazy. They were even further away. So it was dramatic, but it was good because, like I said, the first few days you really wanted to be 6 feet apart. But then as we got more into it, I mean, we still respected it, especially when you're in public. You want to make sure that you're giving the right image. But, I mean, I hung out with these players day in and day out for 3 weeks. So, like, I was part of family in a way. Everyone was. So it was just a matter of, like, not wanting to upset people publicly, I think, more than anything, than, like, our own safety once we got to, like, day 33. Like, it didn't matter anymore.
It feels like what needed to be done was done. You kind of have to work with what you have. At this point, people were so hungry for tennis, to watch tennis, to play tennis. You had to take all the proper safety protocols. And if that meant awkwardness and distance and camera in one direction, camera in the other direction, spaced out, then, you know, it was going to work. Did anyone end up testing positive as far as the players, coaches?
As far as I know, as far as been publicly released, no.
Wow.
But that's the truth, because I was there, and like, you know, every like little rumor, every little bit of gossip, everyone knew. So I think if had anyone tried to cover it up, we would have absolutely known right away. So there was zero positive tests, but a lot of that was because of the multiple tests. I think if you only have one test coming in, you risk the chance of someone picking it up on the airplane. So you got to give that a few days to settle, test them again. And then you have the risk of, like, them leaving the site, going to a nightclub, which is literally impossible where you were, but going to a nightclub or going to, I don't know, some kind of crowded music venue, it's literally impossible. But I think if you didn't have all those tests, it'd be a lot harder. So there was no positive tests, and it shows that it can be done, but it also is a very unique environment. Like, we were in the middle of nowhere in West Virginia. I think when you're in New York, the risk is different. Even though our numbers, our COVID cases are so low, it's very impressive. West Virginia had, like, I don't know, under 5,000 total the whole pandemic. That was like one day in New York at some point. It's just, I don't know. I'm not a COVID expert. No one is, but we were so lucky and everyone worked together and there was no positives. So it's great.
I'm actually pretty shocked, not because I didn't think that you guys were taking, like, the proper protocols and safety measures, but because the tests are sometimes unpredictable. Sometimes you get false positives, false negatives. So I'm kind of impressed, but I'm also worried, were there false negatives? But if everyone was being safe and smart, then it should be okay.
So. If someone had the symptoms, like, we would have known, and no one did. Like, there was no... Like I said, there was very few injuries. There was no examples of anyone even having a cold. Like, there was nothing. And, you know, I'm not interacting with all 100, whatever, 20 people that were on site the whole time. But I think I would have known. And there was nothing. And I think it's because the environment was such a safe, contained little bubble that it was literally impossible for you to get sick. Any kind of sickness.
It was a safe bubble. So obviously a dramatic point was when one of the players from Orlando decided, you know, it was maybe okay to leave. And it's okay to talk about her because everyone knows about it. Danielle Collins. What were your thoughts on kind of how people reacted and what they told her she had to do, which was to leave?
Yeah. Okay. So that was unreal, because she for sure was getting a very high paycheck and for sure understood that she couldn't leave. But if she understood she couldn't leave, why would she just tell her whole team and admit it? If she's only like an hour and a half away, why would you just say, why not be like, hey, I'm on a hike, I'll be back in an hour? Because the idea was that the reason they found out was because she couldn't make it for the third, at that point would have been the third test, it was mid-season, and she was like, hey, I'm in Charlotte. Why would you admit that if you knew that was going to get you kicked out? So the whole thing, I think, was a misunderstanding. I don't know if she had a bad day and wanted to leave and go see someone. I don't know if she really wanted to go and get supplements, which is what was told to us. I don't really understand what was going through her head. And my biggest regret is that I didn't, like, try to interview her more, because I had to do a story for tennis.com. World Team Tennis was one of my jobs. Tennis.com was the other one. So it was kind of weird. And tennis.com wanted, like, the exclusive, like, what's happening? Talk to Carlos, talk to players, talk to Jay Gooding, her coach. And I did, but I didn't, like, try hard enough to talk to her. Because of how awkward the situation was, I am worried that, like, she's upset that we did a story of tennis.com. But then at the same time, like, that's my job. Like, if you leave the site and get dismissed, it would be kind of weird not to cover it. So I have both thoughts. And, like, this experience for me was such a good networking experience, because I got to meet all these players in, like, a more intimate setting and really, like, go through something together, and the coaches and staff and everyone. So, yeah, the Danielle Collins thing was hard because, I don't know, I'm worried that, like, she'll never speak to me again, but at the same time, like, I had to do my job, so it is what it is. And she did leave, and then the steps taken were taken swiftly, and an example was made of her. I think that's the best way to look at it. And you leave the site for a day, you're out. Like, I guess you're contaminated in a way. You're a risk, and they could test her again, but they didn't.
Yeah, and the fact that they stood by their word and kind of stayed very strict set an example. If anyone was even considering leaving or doing something, like, then, you know, it was very sure that measures would be taken where you'd have to leave. And as far as Danielle, she performed an act that kind of warranted the media to get involved, for the tournament director to get involved. So I don't think it's anything you should worry about. I see her team kind of agreed with the measures taken. Tenney's obviously had a lot to say, saying that he supported the move. How did you feel like Orlando bounced back after that moment?
They won the match the next day, and then they like pretty much dominated and went on a tear and did super well and ended up finishing second. The playoffs were another story. I don't know what happened there, but they were a favorite. It was like nothing had happened. They just like bounced back really quick, and they were a tightly knit team. You could see them always hanging out. They always had dinners together. They practiced together. They were like a unit, which not all the teams were. Some had a bit more different individual coaches involved. Jessica Pegula had her coach David Witt. He's awesome, and they all work together. And I think it was interesting to see how they bounced back so well. I don't know what that really means about what Danielle was bringing, but she'd only played like 2 matches, so she hadn't even had the chance to bring much. People were asking me like, what actually happened? I'm like, dude, this is what I was told. This is what we're saying. This is what it is. Like, I don't know. Like, she for sure had other reasons beyond supplements, like surely, but I don't know.
Supplements. That's what it was.
I like they made an example of her. It really worked. People were scared, and you gotta set the standard.
Can I ask if you felt like the bond between that team maybe got stronger after her dismissal?
I don't think they knew each other that well to begin with. Like, I think it was James Ward, Ken Skupski, Hannah Sangren, Jessica Pegula, and Daria Yurek. I don't think they knew each other that well to begin with, so I don't think they really had time to bond with Danielle or without her yet. So it's more of a timing thing. Like, as it got into the second week, I think they got more comfortable. And they are all excellent, excellent, phenomenal tennis players. And like I said, Sangren was playing so well. Pegula was playing so well. When you have 2 singles players kicking butt, like, it makes it a lot easier to win. Even though doubles is more of a focus, it puts a lot less pressure on doubles. But that was more it. I think the fact that Pegula was able to step up. Had she, you know, maybe not been playing so well, it wouldn't have gone this well. But she played so well. She is someone to watch these next few months for sure.
So do you think Sangren's reaction was more about the safety rather than, you know, the actual player stuff laughing? I see you laughing over there. I'm trying to dig deep, girl.
Yeah. So I feel like I got to know the players a lot more, and they are very candid, honest individuals, particularly off the record. But I don't know if he knew her that well before, so I can't speak on whether or not he was happy or sad or whatever, but I went to him for the quote because I felt like I knew him better.
Yeah, that's why I'm asking you. I saw the quote, and I was just sitting there, and I was like, wow, this is juicy. I was like, I'm gonna ask Nina about this.
And I didn't, like, in the moment, like, in that day, I didn't feel like, oh, I'm going to go and find some juicy quotes. I just thought, like, who is most likely to not reject me? And it was Tennis Center.
Sometimes you have to do that as a media reporter. You gotta go with comfort.
Yeah. I could have probably asked somebody else and they would have just been like, you know, something more safe. But I thought it was a good choice. So
He's also been a character. I mean, chugging a beer post-match, that was hilarious.
That was the best moment of the season, I'd say. Not actually, but it was so funny. So funny. And I think a few players wanted to emulate him and do it after they won certain matches, but then they didn't end up winning them or something. So people were inspired. And I think he would have done it again had they actually won, but their playoffs match wasn't great, so it was so one-sided.
He was just
a really bad way to end, but it was a great season for them.
He was just doing what everyone was thinking and wanting, honestly. Probably like 3 weeks in, you just want to like just have a beer on a hot day.
I think they were just like hanging, the beers were just like somewhere near the, like, I mean, people were selling beers on site, so they were available. And maybe he was just like, oh, it's there, I might as well just go for it. I don't know, it takes balls. I don't know.
Oh, 100% takes balls, especially in front of like so many important people, USTA, WTA, ATP, World Team Tennis. I remember on my 21st birthday, I played a tournament in Flushing Meadows. Remember back in the day they had that tournament where if you won it, you got a wild card into the Open. They canceled that, unfortunately. But I won that tournament on my 21st birthday. After my match, after I shook my opponent's hand, they came on court and handed me a beer. they like drank this on the U.S. Open court. Like I trained there all year long, so they like knew me. They wanted to make my 21st special. But, like drink this beer on court. This is your first. I did it, and I have a picture. I do have a picture of it. It was hilarious. I was holding like the trophy, and I had a beer in one hand. Like this is your 21st birthday. I'm like okay. Like I don't know. Like. Maybe because I'm legal, it's okay, but still tennis and alcohol should not mix.
I love that, though. No, I know tennis and alcohol is technically not supposed to mix, but I think some situations warrant it. That one for sure warrants it. The tennis sanguine moment was iconic, so I don't think there's any regrets there. There was no backlash for it, at least not, you know, not where we were. It was more like the funniest, like, it made people happy, I think. Like, I felt like I was happier that day because I was like, someone's having a good time.
Because it feels like the more you can, like, be relatable as a tennis player to, like, the normal person, the more you realize that tennis players are normal people. They're not, like, people you can't relate to. I know I keep saying relate. But the more relatable you are, the more the fans and the public eye can feel for these athletes and realize, you know, they're just people. We get so much hate mail each day when you win, when you lose. So I don't know, if you see that we're actually just people, you might feel for us.
Exactly. And it felt more different. I mean, I was a player, but I've worked in tennis coverage for 7 years, and this is the first time where it felt really different. Like, the media relationship with the players was different. We felt like we were more part of a family versus them, like, me versus them, you know? Usually they feel, like, a little bit of animosity. They're worried I'm trying to, like, I don't know, make them look bad or something, and I'm just trying to do my job and make them look good. Most of the time, 99% of the time, it's positive stories about how great tennis is to, like, expand the sport. It's not trying to be like, you drank a beer, you're bad, you left the campus, everyone hates you. I'm not the kind of journalist. So I think that we had an understanding, and that was nice to develop across the month, basically.
Well, thank you for all that World Team Tennis info. Obviously, today, some 2020 U.S. Open health protocols just came out, and I would love to go through them with you and get your thoughts on them. Obviously, this year's U.S. Open is going to be so very different from every other U.S. Open we've ever had. A bunch of players have opted not even to come, which, you know, it's a personal decision, how comfortable you feel for yourself and your entourage, your travel. New York happens to be one of the best places to be in the U.S. right now, which, how shocking is that, Nina?
It is unbelievable. I thought I'd come back from West Virginia and we would be back in a second swing, and here we are, just thriving.
Yeah, it's truly remarkable. So, number one, players at private homes must have 24-hour security and transportation. I guess this is if players opt not to stay in the hotel. They were saying if you stay in like a home in Long Island, for instance, you have to pay essentially for a security. I don't know. Is it a system or a person? People watching you, making sure you don't interact with people outside the bubble.
How weird is that, though? The security is not for your safety. Well, it is for your safety in a way, but it's to make sure that you don't do anything against the rules. But, like, I don't understand how they're going to... I don't get it. You know, I'll be honest with you. I don't understand how a security guard is going to be, like, paid by the USTA, but paid by you as well as a player, and then tell on you if you leave and go to Walmart. Like, is that what happens? Like,
Yeah, that's what it seems like. But can't you just pay them and be like, I'll pay you more if you don't go? But they're probably hired by USTA as well. There's got to be more to it.
I imagine most players will not be doing that option, so I guess it's more to keep them from trying to push them to staying at the hotel. Maybe.
Makes sense. So your entourage has to be tested 4 days. I find it funny how they call it an entourage. I guess players can bring, I heard one.
I thought three.
Well, three. You're right. Three. I'm looking now. It says three. Max three people. And
it's a lot of people. They could have had a qualifying.
Yeah, seriously. So, okay, if you leave the bubble without permission, withdrawal. Positive test, you're out of the draw. And this is the most controversial one so far that's gotten some backlash on social media. Doubles players serve as singles alternates.
I think it's a very, very bizarre situation where the USTA feels they can't bring in actual alternates unless they put them up in the bubble and put them in the hotel and have them buy into the safe situation of seeing nobody else except bubble people. So their only option to fill a spot is someone who's already in the bubble. There's no juniors, no qualifying, doubles.
I can see where they come from, and I can see it being a desperate thing, which we have to be kind of desperate at this point to be safe and help people. But I can also see players being infuriated because, let's say, they're one out of making it into the main draw. Like, their U.S. Open dream is crushed for the year. I think, personally, Nina, I think to bring three alternates would be the way to go.
I have to agree with you because at World Team Tennis we had three or four, or at least three. There was Christian Harrison, Ulysses Blanche, and Haley Baptiste were alternates. And they were in a bubble from day one with everyone else, and they spent the entire 3 weeks there and subbed in when needed.
They did play. Yes,
they did. They all played except they all got a little bit of court time here and there because people did have days where they weren't playing, and then it was kind of nice to see them. It was nice to see Haley play. It was great. So, I don't see why the USTA wouldn't do the same thing, but they must have their reasons, and maybe it's because when you say no qualifying, you say no qualifying. And once you start adding in, a couple people can come, it becomes unfair to everyone else, and then what if the next few spots are international players, they have to come and sit here for, like, what? Is there a pre-quarantine system? I don't think there is anymore, but you have to...
There was 2 weeks. I don't know about now. And, like, what if, for whatever reason, it's more than three people? Then what do you do, right?
It doesn't make any... Yeah, what if...
You know what I'm saying? Then all of a sudden you go to the doubles players after that? Yeah. No, it's sticky. It just sucks. Like, I can see both sides of the argument. I can see so many different things. It's rough. I don't really know.
The only way this would work is if everyone was at the Greenbrier. This is my biased opinion. It's going to be impossible. New York City is huge. I don't understand. I understand that players were going to do their best to stay safe, but it's hard to control a couple hundred people in a giant city. And I understand their security, but I don't envy the USJ. This is an impossible task.
I can't.
And rules change all the time, so that's the thing. Like, that could be the rule now, but in 4 days, it could be like, oh no, we actually are going to have 10 alternates. Like, you just never know.
Can you imagine the U.S. Open players, now not in a team setting, going to West Virginia, the Greenbrier Resort, and how different would that be? I'm not sure how different you think that would be.
It would be so different. Yeah, obviously, like, logistically, it's impossible if they have, like, two stadium courts. I get it, but it would be so different because I think once you take out the team aspect, every man for himself changes the whole environment. And I don't think that players would sabotage a tournament. They wouldn't do that, but I think that they'd be more, I don't know, more, not more aggressive, but more, like, standoffish. They wouldn't be as into it. The atmosphere would be a lot darker and harder and a lot more intense. People would be meaner to each other for sure. Yeah, it wouldn't be the same spirit. The team spirit was so crazy, especially because World of Tennis has trades. Like, you never know when you might get shifted to another team, so you're not gonna be mean to everyone. So it would be different energy for sure.
And in World Team Tennis, every player is kind of getting paid the same, and there's no ranking points for wins and losses. So when those rules are set, when people can do better than others, besides, you know, as a team, really, then I feel like the competitiveness, the edge, decreases.
It changed the rules this year as well. World Team Tennis used to have individual prizes, and then this year it was, like, if you were the best singles player, you'd get a bonus. This year it was just teams. Like, first place got a bonus, second place got a bonus, third and fourth. So you really were team-focused. And then players actually get different salaries, which is super juicy. It's like negotiating a contract. Like, you all have this... I mean, arguably, you don't have all the same job, but it's kind of like work. Like, everyone has a different salary, and you negotiate ahead of the season. So I don't know what, like, Danielle Collins gave up, but I think it was a pretty nice chunk versus what somebody else... Like, Haley Baptiste probably got paid a lot less because she wasn't on court as much.
That is very juicy. I had no idea. So is it, like, based on what you guys agree, your ranking, stuff like that? Now, did Danielle get to take the money for the first week?
Yeah, she got paid for the matches that she, the days that she was there, of course, yeah. I mean, she did perform, so it made sense.
Right. No, that does make sense, but that is super interesting. Nina, is there anything else we missed about World Team Tennis or your upcoming thoughts about the Open? I'm so excited. Well, I actually don't know if I'll see you at the Open. This is so weird. I'm so used to telling my friends and some family members, oh, see you in Flushing in a few weeks. It's not like that anymore.
It's definitely weird that we're not going to be on site and there's no media. I mean, I think ESPN and World Feed are on site, but no, like, reporters, which is bizarre. But, I mean, I get it. We're going to do it via Zoom, it sounds like. I don't really know. We're all kind of in this strange time figuring it out as the days go. I think my only thing is just for everyone that played World Team Tennis, everyone that watched it, like, we should appreciate it for what it was and the fact that it was pulled off successfully. I know there was a lot of people kind of hating and judging, and it's hard to be judged from afar, and I'm like, if you weren't there, you don't understand, and I stand by that. I think if you weren't in the bubble, you don't know what it was like, and it was honestly like a beautiful experience for even people who lost. Like, it wasn't about that. Everyone still got a paycheck and can say 2020 wasn't that bad because they got 3 weeks of great work and great experiences and great memories and hopefully some friendships. And I mean, I hope the U.S. Open is a similar experience and that people can say they lived through something unique and that it worked. So that's my only hope, is that goes well.
Well, Nina, we look forward to chatting with you after the Open and finding out what goes down there. Thank you for coming on to Jewels on the Hustle.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun. Anytime.
Well, that's a wrap. Thank you, Nina, for dishing out the deets on World Team Tennis. Glad we sort of got to live vicariously through you. But seriously, how cool would it be if we had like a production crew record World Team Tennis? Like, next year, I think it would be so cool if World Team Tennis was always 3 weeks long in one remote location. All teams were together. It was filmed. The public eye would actually see that athletes are humans. Very shocking. Athletes are always seen as like robots, people that can just turn the switch on and off and do whatever they're told. But no, they're people, and you'd get to really learn about the person's, you know, interests, get to know them at a more personal level, what they're about, and you see the behind the scenes, how players interact. You really get to understand the sport and the connections. I think that would be super cool. And since we're getting off now the topic of playing a team sport, or a team event, I want to express the extreme, extreme importance of having team and teammates that have one goal, that have the right motives, are in it, and have the right mindset. You could have, honestly, a player that's ranked so much worse than the rest, but if they have the right mindset, that is key, and that will take the team over the edge, honestly. Well, thanks, guys, for tuning in. Be sure to follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Jules L. Baba, at JulesElBaba. If you have any questions or comments, email me at JulesOnTheHustlePodcast@gmail.com. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast so you know when I post my next episode. And if you like this episode, please leave a 5-star review. Or, sorry, 5-star rating and review. I love to see what you guys have to say. Anyways, guys, see you guys next time on Jules on the Hustle.